Sup, freaks. This rip was brought to you by our good friends at Unchained. We've got a special event for you, an online event. Bitcoin is hitting its stride with massive ETF inflows, major geopolitical changes, increasing corporate adoption, and a proposed U.S. strategic reserve. 2025 is shaping up to be a defining year. I think it's pretty safe to say that if you've been paying attention. You probably should be. Here's a real question you need to be asking yourself. Are you ready? Is your Bitcoin house in order? If you're not sure, you're in luck. On December 10th, Unchained is hosting the central session focused on helping you get positioned for what's ahead. You walk away with a clear path to your end of year moves, smarter strategies for bringing your family into Bitcoin, and the confidence of knowing you're set up for the long haul. Join Unchained General Counsel Jeff Vandrew and Adamant Capital founder Ter Demeester, both have been on this podcast many times, to understand what makes this moment different and the key moves you need to consider from year-end planning to bring your family into Bitcoin the right way. With the bull run gaining momentum, this is your window to get ready for what's ahead. Register at unchained.com/RHR. That's unchained.com/RHR. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at CoinKite. CoinKite produces the best Bitcoin hardware in the world. If you're watching the video right now, you can see their block clock behind me. It is the only true block clock, the best block clock. They also have the Cold Card MK4 and the Cold Card Q, the most secure Bitcoin hardware devices on the market. Two secure enclaves, the ability to create private public key pairs offline in an air gap fashion. MK4 looks like a little rudimentary calculator. The Q is more advanced, looks like a BlackBerry. It's got a full QWERTY keyboard, has a QR scanner, NFC enabled. Both of them are NFC enabled. And the Q has a battery pack, so you can do everything without having to be connected to a wall. It's a beautiful thing. Go to CoinKite.com, check out all these products, pick them up, use the code RHR for 5% off at checkout. Last but not least, this rip was brought to you by our good friends at Stackwork. Stackwork is a cloud sourcing platform that combines the power of humans and AI. If you've listened to us discuss Simple Proof and Digital Witness and how they secured the Guatemalan election on the show, Stackwork and their distributed cloud sourcing workforce helped secure that Guatemalan election. Right now, they're looking for mobile developers. So if you are looking for a job in the Bitcoin space, that is not only at the cutting edge of Bitcoin, but also AI. Hit up Stackwork, go to their careers page, find it. They're looking for Swift and Kotlin mobile devs right now. So if you're a Swift or a Kotlin developer looking for a job in the space, looking to be on the cutting edge, go hit up Stackwork. And you can go to their website at Stackwork. That's STAKWORK.AI. Enjoy this rip. Okay.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Oh, damn it. I can't believe you ninja launched.
Happy Thanksgiving, freaks.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving Day special in the books.
100K Bitcoin jinx with Adele and Marty Ben.
Marty didn't know I named it that, but he's just been jinxing it left and right since last week, so it seemed fitting.
Rabbit hole recap 333, 333.
That's a big one.
The No Agenda guys would not be happy with this, or they would. Why? 333. It's a number with a lot of taboo around it. But I went, because I was talking to a freak earlier this week on the phone. Talking about like the prospects of getting in from TradFi to the Bitcoin industry. And he has a bet with his wife that if I named Rabbit Hole Recap a particular title, he would win. And I forgot to mention it before we hit record.
Well, that would have been a rigged bet.
Yeah.
What would What was the name supposed to be?
I completely forget, so it doesn't even matter.
You don't even remember what the name was supposed to be?
I forget what it was supposed to be.
Well, he should know. He should know better. I'm the one who names the episodes.
It's true.
There was something else forgotten from last week that we'll get to when we get to boosts.
No, Sahil, that wasn't forgotten. Sahil boosted the show.
Oh, yeah.
No, he boosted the show instead of the episode. The dude can't even figure out how to work Fountain.
What did he say?
Was he promoting his new podcast?
Oh, Walk and Talk?
Podcast? If you guys want to promo that.
Logan, do you have the boost? Can you read the boost?
Did you have the link?
Yeah, let me pull it up.
He boosted us 69,420 sats.
Nice, Sahil.
But he boosted the show instead of the... I think Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday.
It's great.
It's a good one.
We were talking about it before the show. Codenames, incredible game.
I love that game.
Anybody can play. You can play for hours, split up teams.
It's a good game.
You got to know how to think with other people. I was playing with my brother and we had some words that only we would know are associated with each other. It's fun.
I found the boost.
Read it, Logan.
User 59656825, 69,420 sats. Friendly reminder for Marty to show up to CrossFit on Friday. Also, come rocket.
Come rocket.
Sahil.
Did not go to CrossFit this morning. I decided my mom's in town. Decided to go to breakfast. Took the boys to the trampoline park. Have you been to a trampoline park recently?
No. My son's a little bit too young for that, but that sounds awesome.
It was awesome. And I'm like a kid in a candy shop.
Did they have that when we were kids?
I don't think they were as popular as... I mean, there's like 10 of them down here in the Austin area.
It's like that in dog bars now, right? It's like the... Yeah. Can we just talk real quick? Like Sahil, a man of character, doesn't even show his new podcast. What is it called? Talk and Walk? Walk and Talk?
I don't know if that's what it is. The vibe of the show is he's walking and talking with his guest and recording.
And it's about Bitcoin design, is it?
Yes. Yeah.
I was supposed to listen to it, but I haven't listened to it yet.
His first episode was with Paul. It was actually really good.
Did you listen to it?
I did.
Paul was, he's got two episodes now. It's called the Studio 21 show. Yeah. Okay. Well, go check it out, freaks. I haven't listened to it. I did have Paul over for Thanksgiving, though. So I kind of got like the off-the-record podcast.
How was that?
It's great. It's always fun chatting with Paul.
Matt, before we start the show, I just want to say I'm thankful for you. It's been a great 6 years. We've come a long way from the studio apartment in Brooklyn to your library where you were during COVID, my father-in-law's bedroom, Austin, Nashville, 1031. Look at us now.
The bedroom's iconic. Likewise, brother. Incredibly grateful. I'm incredibly grateful for all the freaks. What a journey.
Yeah.
It's an honor.
This wouldn't be possible without the freaks. Do you think we could talk to each other once a week for an hour to 3 hours without the freaks? Giving us the encouragement, letting us know that they're getting value out of the show. It's a great thing. Thank you guys for joining us. If you are live, we know it's Thanksgiving weekend. Our families are in town. I'm sure your families are in town. So we appreciate you. If you're here joining us for Rabbit Hole Recap 333, and we are not going to waste your time, we will jump into it now that we've had the powwow about Thanksgiving board games. Sahil's podcast, and we'll go to Clark Moody's dashboard. Current price of Bitcoin's 97,150 cuck bucks. One cuck buck's going to get you 1,029 sats. If the price were a little lower, we could have had 1031 sats. The Bitcoin gods weren't working with us, though. Market cap of Bitcoin is 1.92 trillion. We are at block height 872,502. Which means we are 426 blocks away from the next difficulty adjustment, which is looking like an upwards adjustment of 1%. Blocks have been coming in at 9 minutes and 54 seconds on average since the last difficulty adjustment. There are currently 105,481 transactions in Clark's mempool. If we go over to mempool.space, we'll see that they have 266,450 transactions in their mempool. Fees, not too high, a little high. 14 sats for V-byte if you want to get in the next block, 12 sats for V-byte if you have a medium priority transaction, and 10 sats for V-byte if you have a low priority transaction. That is the state of the network. Things are happening. Things are happening. Big news this week from 1031 Portfolio Company. We released an episode of Bitcoin Alpha with Becca and Rob from AnchorWatch this morning on the TFTC YouTube page here. If you're watching live there, you can find it there or your podcast feed on the TFTC. But they officially became a Lloyd's of London cover holder, which allows them to officially underwrite insurance policies for individuals, companies that want to insure their Bitcoin holdings. And what's really important here is that AnchorWatch has found a way, leveraging a combination of Bitcoin's native smart contracting capabilities via Miniscript and the work they've done with Lloyd's, to ensure Bitcoin one-to-one up to $100 million per policy. It's pretty massive. We've been watching them build this behind the scenes for over 2 years now, and this is a big step for them.
Yeah, so to be clear, it's collaborative custody, multi-sig, and it's insured. And one piece that I think is particularly awesome here is they're actually able to insure $5 runch attacks as well, which is I think, incredibly unique in the space. I don't know if anyone is offering that. I definitely, no one's offering collaborative custody insurance where you keep your own keys. But with $5 wrench attacks added on as well, the coverage is pretty strong. It's incredibly strong. It basically just, not a lawyer, but my understanding is that it covers pretty much everything except you sending a transaction where you're send it to like the wrong address or something. That's on you. So still double check your addresses. But one little piece here, freaks, that is kind of embarrassing on our end is last week we just got on and on about like huge news for 1031 companies. We forgot to talk about this. We didn't include this one in the list. And it is absolutely massive. And just to show, you know, how ridiculous that was, like I was actually the one who sent out the press release. I still forgot to put on the list. So apologies to Rob and Becca and the rest of their team. But we gave you front and center coverage this week. And that'll go into effect in December. So at some point in December, it'll be live and you'll be able to spin up your vaults and have them insured by one of the largest insurance companies in the world.
Yeah, the Lloyd's stamp of approval is massive, particularly for institutions looking to get comfortable with a product like this. And I think going back to like the $5 wrench attack insurance, Becca explained it really great on the Bitcoin Alpha episode. Like, it creates this really unique disincentive for $5 wrench attacks in the first place. If you have like a, instead of "this house is protected by Brink" sign in front of your house, it's like "this house is protected by AnchorWatch." Because if you do get $5 wrench attack, an attacker successfully figures out a way to get your Bitcoin that's insured in one of these policies, you get your, like, AnchorWatch will do an investigation to make sure that was actually legit and you weren't like faking a $5 wrench attack. And once it's obvious that you weren't, you get your Bitcoin back in full one-to-one with up to your policy, what you took out. And then the Bitcoin that the attacker took is technically legally AnchorWatch's Bitcoin that they then have an incentive to recover. And so you have this sort of like bounty on that Bitcoin that a company with a lot of strong backers is looking to recover. And so you have this disincentive where if you're $5 wrench attacking and you do it from somebody who's insured by AnchorWatch, like, you're going to be hunted down. Those UTXOs are going to be hunted down into perpetuity, which is really interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, while we're just, before we wrap this topic, the cool part about AnchorWatch to me is that you have best-in-class tech, so the actual software wallet and the coordinator for setting up these multi-sigs is, it's just awesome. It's just, it's a technically strong foundation. And then you have the insurance built on top of that. And both undertakings were very long undertakings during the bear market. So it's pretty awesome to see it out.
It is. Shout out to Rob Becker, the whole team. I saw Rob retweeted us. He might be in the live chat. I see the YouTube live chat. I haven't pulled that up yet. Shout out to everybody in the real live chat over at zap.stream.
rhr.tv/stream. We have Map21 zapped 10,000 sats and Josh zapped 2,100 sats. Those are our two largest zappers so far today. Thank you, freaks.
Thank you, guys. Rob is not in the YouTube live chat. Just checked. All right, moving on the list. Big news as it pertains to a case that we've been covering for a couple years now, Tornado Cash. The U.S. Appeals Court overturned sanctions against Tornado Cash. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals determined that the Office of Foreign Assets Control, OFAC as it's commonly referred to, exceeded its authority by adding Tornado Cash to its special designated nationals and block persons list. So we hold that Tornado's Cash immutable smart contracts, the lines of privacy-enabling software code, are not the property of a foreign national or entity, meaning one, they cannot be blocked under IEEPA, and two, OFAC overstepped its congressionally defined authority, ruled the three-judge panel at the Fifth Circuit Appeals Court. The court determined that Tornado Cash's smart contracts are merely lines of code and do not qualify as services or property. It also concluded that Tornado Cash does not own or control these contracts because the developers have relinquished any role in their operation, distinguishing between mutable and immutable software. This is pretty big.
Yep, this is unexpected, fantastic news. I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop. It's surprising in a good way. So it should be interesting to see how the Tornado Cash case proceeds. Right. Because they could still, you know, I guess like the U.S. has one founder and the Dutch have another founder is my understanding. So the U.S. could still end up throwing the founder in jail for a long time. But it's a case that this ruling seems like, I'm once again, not a lawyer, seems like it will set pretty strong precedent in terms of privacy and freedom on blockchains.
Yeah, and it highlights the importance of advocacy on behalf of organizations like Coin Center, the Bitcoin Policy Institute. I think there's a strong argument to be made that a lot of the amicus briefs that have been written, particularly around the Tornado Cash case, have actually had some effect in helping to educate judges and lawyers about how these things actually work and whether or not people are actually the quote unquote operators actually have any control, whether it's a smart contract or a collaborative transaction, whatever it may be. So it's so cool to see. Unexpected as well. Was not expecting something like this. It's nice to know that there are judges within the U.S. court system that will dig in and try to understand the stuff and rule adequately. This isn't over, obviously. This was an appeals court. Bet it will be appealed by the prosecution, and this will continue, but it's a good step, good precedent. I'm piggybacking off of that. Samurai Wallet and Tornado Cash prosecutor Damian Williams is stepping down in December from his spot as the United States Attorney for the Southern District of New York. And he also, I believe they already announced the replacement too.
Do we know who the replacement is?
I think I saw Lola tweeting about it. Always have to remember to put the zero for the O with Lola.
Yeah, I don't know what to take from this. It seems like good news. I have no idea what why this is the case or how this affects things going forward. It might have something to do. I wouldn't be surprised if it's in relation to the election and he thought he was going to get removed regardless. But also unexpected.
Let me try and find. You keep talking. I'm going to try and find this tweet from Lola.
So also in the show notes, I put links to donate to the Samurai Legal Defense Fund. You can go to p2prights.org to donate. You could either donate to P2P Rights' general fund, which will funds will be used for a variety of legal defense cases for open source software developers, or you can earmark it specifically for the Samurai founders. There's been a lot of positive momentum in terms of donations, but they're still well short of the amount of money that they really need to fight this case in the right way. So every sat really does help. And also on that note, Ocean did a really cool thing this week where the way Ocean's set up is you don't actually have an account on Ocean. You just set your worker name to a Bitcoin address and the Bitcoin goes directly to that address if you find a block. Like if a block is found by Ocean, your proportion goes to the Bitcoin address that you list, right? So they made it very easy. They tweeted out and posted on Noster what address to use for that. And so you can set your hash to automatically donate to the Samurai Legal Defense, which I thought was pretty cool. Great, you know, great initiative by them. And just the concept, right? Donating hash to a legal defense fund is a powerful, powerful concept.
Yeah, considering the history of Luke and Samurai team, this is a big move by the Ocean team.
Yeah, I you gotta love to see it. They historically they've hated each other, and the Samurai developers have, you know, been very aggressive about Luke specifically, and then later Ocean when the pool launched. So it's cool seeing them be bigger men about it and,
principle in front of personal squabbles, you know.
Exactly. Absolutely love to see it.
Yeah. As Matt said, you can donate to a lot of these defense cases at p2prights.org. And then we have a link to a Primal account where you can donate as well.
Look, we're getting close to the end of the year. Bitcoin's up a lot. You might have a lot of gains. If you are in the US, both p2prights.org and OpenSats are tax deductible. So in either case, you can donate anonymously or you can donate and get a tax deduction. So if you do have a lot of tax gains, consider supporting these causes. And then you get to legally pay Uncle Sam less. It's a win-win.
Do you think Uncle Sam's allocating your dollars correctly?
Definitely not.
If yes, pay all the taxes you owe. If not, try to figure out a way to pay less taxes.
We have test dummy in the Noster live chat zapped 21,000 sats, and we have silent.link has also zapped 21,000 sats. Thank you for your support, and specifically silent.link. Thank you for your incredible service. I absolutely rely on it, and it's awesome.
And shout out to longtime freak OK Sharp, the boomer pleb here, who actually navigated to set up a zap.stream account. If the boomer can do it, you can do it too. Set it up, freaks. Moving along, big news out of the mining world. I've heard rumblings of this for the last few weeks, but it was finally confirmed by the team at Blockspace Media. Shout out to Will Foxley and crew. It has become apparent that Bitmain Antminer units are being halted at U.S. Customs for months. I believe this, I don't know if this has to do with tariffs. Tariffs have been on miners coming from China for some time now. But it seems like the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, requested the U.S. Customs and Border Protection to hold Bitmain ASIC shipments at U.S. ports. Border Protection has reportedly delayed some of these shipments nationwide for nearly 2 months, including ports in San Francisco and Detroit. Bitmain's latest Antminer S21 and T21 ASIC imports are being held. Sources said FCC and CBP aren't targeting other makers like MicroBT or Canaan, according to the report. Yeah,
so doesn't that mean it's not tariff related? Because otherwise MicroBT would be getting hit too.
It's not tariff related, but MicroBT, I believe, officially moved their corporate headquarters to Malaysia. And I think Bitmain may still be there. I don't think it's tariff related, but
so what is your speculation? Why is this happening?
I don't know. I don't know. Speculating. I'm speculating on the spot right now.
You haven't heard any like rumors or anything?
No rumors about intention. Just I've heard over the last few weeks that the people have had their order stopped or frozen at the border.
I guess it's definitely happening.
Yeah.
Well, we'll keep an eye on it, freaks, and we'll keep you guys updated.
Yeah, what would it be? I mean,
be aware.
Are they trying to say that Bitmain's importing backdoored hardware into the United States? Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe they're going to seize them for the strategic mining reserve.
Maybe. Another source told Blockspace that CBP...
I don't think that's the case, but...
This is fucked up, too. Another source told Blockspace that CBP is holding about 200 units of miners. CBP and FCC ignored the company's information requests and are charging daily fees over $200,000.
What?
The company has hired a law firm to obtain information from the FCC. The FCC's media representative told Blockspace they have no knowledge of orders halting Bitmain's hardware.
Well, that sounds like a scam.
Yeah.
Well, added to the list of externalities that make the mining business incredibly cutthroat and hard to do.
Well, if you have miners plugged in, this is great to see. You know, your competition is having their hardware frozen and unable to be plugged in.
That's a fun trick
lower for you.
Maybe it's like Marathon. Like one of the large miners are trying to screw over everybody else. No, I mean, that's obviously, I'm just fucking around.
Yeah, we're at 708 exahash per second right now over the last week, according to mempool.space. Yeah, this is something to keep an eye on. From what I hear, it's not easy to actually get these border patrol agents to actually work with you. They're very...
Yeah,
it's pretty typical. It's like
least surprising thing ever.
It's like working with the DMV to get a problem solved. Not ideal. News this week from Swan. They had to send an email to customers explaining why their accounts are being charged $125. Apparently it's coming from their third-party custody and trust provider, Fortress Trust, which is charging $125. I believe it's an annual service fee, admin fee, per account that is automatically being deducted from Swan users, or technically Fortress Trust users. So this is the Swan email. Fortress did respond in an email as well. I'll give this to you, Logan. You can throw it up. But Swan's basically saying they're going to cover the cost by reducing fees for their users from now until July of 2025, I believe. They're going to give them basically $250 in fee credits between now and then. But it highlights the importance of owning your own infrastructure.
What did Fortress say?
Fortress said, "Dear valued client, Fortress is aware of potentially misleading statements related to client accounts and wanted to provide an update. We are monitoring these communications. We'll do what we can within our control to ensure you have the most up-to-date and accurate information. As many clients are aware, Fortress has notified Electronic Solidus Inc., doing business as Swan Bitcoin, that it will terminate providing services to Swan Bitcoin as of December 20th, 2024. Many reasons go into these decisions, but top among them is our ability to have confidence that we can provide a suitable service to Fortress account holders. Rest assured, pending the transfer, Fortress is proceeding with managing client accounts in accordance with the custodial agreement between Fortress and clients. We'll continue to prioritize our clients' experience throughout the process to avoid any further miscommunications or misunderstandings regarding the next steps in ensuring an efficient and safe handoff to a successor custodian. Fortress will be updating client account both on its site in social media platforms and has updated client account information directly that reflects the balance of your custodial account and any current projected amounts being reserved pending the final transfer of your account balance to the successor custodian. For additional transparency, we've also published an updated fee schedule online in the following week that reflects the cost of our services. We have a sole discretion to waive or otherwise amend such fees in accordance with our custodial agreements with clients, as well as based on our negotiations with other partner platforms. Well, he said, she said going on between Swan and Fortress right now.
Seems to be a trend. Yeah, so to be clear here, Swan is not covering this exit fee or whatever that Fortress is charging. They're giving a fee credit. So you have to basically buy, I think their fee is 1%. So you have to buy like $12,500 worth of Bitcoin to get back your $125 worth of exit fee. I mean, I would, if I was a Swan customer, I'd be pretty pissed off right now. And, I mean, I would just strongly recommend that if you are looking for an alternative, to consider downloading Strike, I think you'll have a very good experience.
Beware, freaks, beware. Next up, eCash Mint's funded with Spillman Channels, the ultimate nodeless Lightning wallet. This is really cool. This is from Luke Childs, and he's basically building on a concept that's been released by Arc Labs. It's a combination of Lightning, Arc, the Arc protocol, and now eCash Mint's. I saw Callie responding to this saying it's not technically self-custodial, but it does seem pretty interesting.
So it is, but to call it self-custody eCash is a way of selling it, but it's not, you know, technically true. So the idea is, right, so if you use eCash, eCash is inherently custodial. It has very strong privacy guarantees. It's programmable, and you can use it to make offline payments, which makes an eCash custodian just strictly better than any other custodian, but obviously you still have custodial risk. Now, this proposal is using something called Spillman channels, which predate Lightning channels. But the biggest issue with the Spillman channel is that it's one direction only, right? A Lightning channel, you can go back and forth. And it has a time expiration date, right? So the channel will automatically settle on chain after a certain amount of time. But the benefits are that you don't have to be running a 24/7 node to, you know, manage your Lightning channels. So it doesn't have that interactivity element. And it still shares the similarity with Lightning that either party can close that on-chain at any time. So the idea is you keep it in this payment channel, right, which is inherently self-custody. So it's a multi-sig with you and your counterparty, where either of you can go back on-chain anytime you want, similar to Lightning. And then when it comes time to make the payment, you on demand go into eCash, you pay into the eCash custodian, and then that eCash custodian then goes through the built-in Lightning gateway to make a Lightning payment. And so in a lot of ways, this works very similar to how eCash currently works with Lightning, where you could set it up so that you have a Lightning channel with an eCash gateway, an eCash custodian, and just pay right into the eCash on demand and then immediately pay out. But you do get this nice benefit of not actually having to touch Lightning yourself while still having that guarantee. So does that make sense? The actual eCash part isn't self-custody, right? It's just you're just on demand flipping through the custodian at time of payment using these Spillman payment channels.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense.
It's kind of similar to how people are using like these Liquid wallets, right? Where at rest, it sits in Liquid and then it swaps into a Lightning payment. It's kind of similar to that situation. And actually, Callie took it a step further. You could do a Spillman channel on the opposite side, right? So like if you're a merchant, instead of receiving eCash, you could receive through your Spillman channel. Now, the issue is it's not bidirectional. So I think in that situation, you're probably still better off just having a Lightning channel with the gateway and just receiving it as a Lightning payment. Like that is literally what people are using Lightning for when they're interacting with the eCash ecosystem. But more tools, the better. It should be interesting to see if someone makes a wallet like that that uses this as a concept. It seems promising. It seems like it could be a big win for self-custody on mobile, where you can just pay out to any Lightning invoice, have pretty strong privacy guarantees without giving up custody.
Yeah. And clarification, Luke Childs, his idea, his spec, what are we calling it? I don't believe it's been implemented. His paper, it references the ARC implementation of Spillman channels. I don't think it actually uses ARC to do channel management.
It does not. No, so Spillman channels predates Lightning and ARC, obviously.
Yeah.
You can think about it as like a, so Lightning is a payment channel protocol, right? It's an interoperable protocol for batch Bitcoin payments. And the beauty of Lightning is that it's bi-directional, right? And you can go in both directions. Spillman channels are much simpler, but you can only go in one direction. So if I set up a Spillman channel to Marty, I can only pay Marty. Marty can't pay me through that channel. But as a result, you don't have to run a Lightning node and constantly, you know, watch for your counterparty doing something where you have to then submit a justice transaction, right? Which is how the Lightning trust model works.
In reading Luke's description of Spillman channels, like you have a predetermined lock time in his example, up to a month.
Yeah, where then it settles on chain after that time period.
Yeah, we're Lightning with the HTLCs. There's no predetermined lock. You need a collaborative close or a justice transaction.
You could have it open, a Lightning channel, you could have open forever. Fees can go up and you can just have this single channel open forever. But anyone who's used a self-custody mobile Lightning wallet or has, even better, tried to build one, knows there's a lot of pain points in doing that. And so there are a lot of trade-offs there. While this could be relatively easy to implement and would provide probably a pretty good user experience.
Yeah. I'm not sure if you've seen the comments. I don't know if they've been on YouTube or Noster, but many people asking us to talk about the covenants debate that's going on right now. Do we need a soft fork? Do we need covenants? Do we need vaults, CTV, opcat, whatever it may be? A lot of talk around there. A lot of people basically positioning like we need covenants to scale Bitcoin. And I think whether it's ARC and their piece on Bitcoin virtual channels, bringing instant settlement to ARC via Spillman channels, or Luke Child's idea with the combination of Spillman channel and eCashment, like I think there are examples of, there are still a lot of scaling solutions that could be enabled today that have not been explored. And me personally, I know people feel very passionate in both directions as it pertains to the conversation around covenants and if and when they will be brought to Bitcoin. But I think I'm firmly in the camp of let's explore as many of these scaling solutions as possible before we get to another soft fork debate.
I mean, I think, you know, soft forks, finding rough consensus for soft forks has historically been incredibly difficult. It's definitely more difficult than it's ever been. You know, the amount of stakeholders, the amount of people that own Bitcoin and have an interest in Bitcoin has grown substantially. And a lot of the values are different between those stakeholders, right? We have a whole new sets of stakeholders that have come in through ETFs. And obviously, this is Saylor's first full cycle being one of the larger holders in Bitcoin. So that whole element, you know, like the suits are here, right? And they bring a whole new value set to Bitcoin. So finding this rough consensus will likely be even more difficult than we've seen in the past. So I think a soft fork in general, a soft fork that has any kind of disagreement, is if it's even barely contentious, is incredibly unlikely. Now, it is probably more likely if there's actual, you know, market pressure for a reason for a change. And so like James O'Byrne has recently been posting a lot about it, a Bitcoin core dev and a friend who I have great respect for. And his main argument is that we need one of these proposals to go through in order to make it more feasible for people to cost efficiently have self-custody and be able to hold their own keys. Now, I think that is not a compelling argument right now because fees are still quite low. Like you would, if I think, there's a tendency by people to, you know, want things today and to plan for the future. But in these kind of distributed networks that are leaderless and they don't have a centralized command and control situation, which is a feature, not a bug, you need actual real pressure if there's going to be any kind of consensus for a change. And so in this situation, that pressure would come from a sustained high fee market, which we clearly have not seen. I mean, some people think mempools will always clear still. So that's just proof in the pudding that I really do not think the market would demand it. So our individual opinions on this, I think, are relatively meaningless at this point in time. I personally haven't seen a proposal that like I would wholeheartedly get behind doing like tomorrow. And I don't really think there's that much of a rush. I think we should be trying many different things. I'm very excited about tooling that does not require soft forks because you can actually use them today, as Marty said, with like eCash and whatnot. But yeah, that's my two cents on the matter. And I will say that as a fund, 1031 does not invest in companies that require a soft fork. And that's not just purely for ideological reasons. I think that's a really easy way to burn investor money because soft forks are incredibly unlikely going forward.
Yeah, and I've said this in the past too. I think ARC, the prospect of ARC, and what both prominent teams working on that, ARC Labs and Second, have brought to market is compelling. And talking to the Second team, they seem like, I think I've said this before, but I think ARC could be a catalyst to stoke the discussion, a serious discussion around whether or not Covenant should get implemented into Bitcoin via soft fork, because I think it's pretty clear if these ARC service providers are going to scale, if they get product market fit and a lot of users and use cases, that it does have scaling limitations that would be alleviated by some sort of covenant being enabling the shared UTXO model. And if you're, whether it's high fee environment, persistently high fee environment leading to pressure, or something like ARC developing a big user base and finding product market fit that reaches limitations, that's another avenue through which I could see a soft fork discussion around covenants becoming more serious, because I think the combination of ARC, Lightning, and eCash is really exciting for the prospects of user experience, payments, and privacy. And those are all three things that need significant improvement around Bitcoin usage. And so if they get product market fit, they reach their physical limitations, what they can scale to, and it becomes obvious, like, hey, if we really want to reap the benefits of these protocols interacting together at scale and we need covenants, that could be another sort of impetus for more serious discussion around this. But I think Matt and I are both in agreement right now. It's like, let's try everything that we have at our fingertips to scale this as efficiently as possible before we jump headfirst into a vigorous soft fork debate.
And it's important to be conservative here, right? Many people, ourselves included, heavily rely on Bitcoin. Let's not, you know, fuck it up. Let's be very deliberate and conservative about how we move forward. I would say that I think this concept that like Saylor controls Bitcoin and decides if it happens or not
is ridiculous.
It's complete FUD. Like the whole reason, the core of Bitcoin's value prop is owning more Bitcoin does not give you more control over the network, which by the way is diametrically it's the complete opposite of proof of stake networks. And just shows how much they've missed the plot. So a Saylor, a BlackRock, they don't have more control over Bitcoin. I will say, once again, probably one of my more controversial opinions, but I've said it many times. If you absolutely do think that we need a change today, anyone can hard fork Bitcoin. You do not need permission to hard fork Bitcoin. And if you hard fork Bitcoin, basically at the time of the fork, those two chains share the same history, but going forward, they have different history. And if so, if you're holding Bitcoin in self-custody at a time of the fork, you have an equivalent amount on the original chain as you do on the fork chain. So actual current stakeholders do not lose anything. Like, you can literally just, as Marty likes to say, go into a coma and you'll still have the same amount of Bitcoin on both sides. But if you do have an opinion, you can sell either side. And I think, you know, maybe some people took the wrong thing away from 2017. Like, the Bcash war was chaotic, you know, living through it. But at the end of the day, you could have just slept through the whole thing and woken up and, you know, your Bitcoin is more powerful and more valuable than it was before that. Like, there was no negative effect. Except for those people who decided to sell their Bitcoin for Bitcoin Cash, they got wrecked. So just something to draw out there and keep in mind.
Yeah. And like, to really highlight this, people saying, oh, Saylor's got 2%, almost 2% of all the Bitcoin. Pull up the Medium posts from May 23rd, 2017, Bitcoin scaling agreement at consensus 2017. The Medium posts heard around the world. This is what led. This was the New York agreement. And
The New York agreement.
You know, scroll down to the bullet points, not, yeah, these. And I mean, people are like, Saylor's got 2%. I mean, at the time in 2017, the coalition of companies and individuals backing the New York agreement had orders of magnitude more Bitcoin and hashing power than Michael Saylor did. So you can see these bullet points. A group of signed companies represents a critical mass of the Bitcoin ecosystem. As of May 25th, this group represents 58 companies located in 22 countries, 83.28% of hashing power, 5.1 billion USD monthly on-chain transaction volume. Keep in mind, this was when Bitcoin was around $1,000, so a material amount of volume back in the day, and 20.5 million Bitcoin wallets. This coalition of companies had what many would have deemed way more influence on Bitcoin at that particular point in time. And if you were to index it for today, it would still be true compared to MicroStrategy. Like,
it wouldn't even be close. It'd be way more than I mean, Saylor stack, right? Because also Saylor they were the biggest exchanges too, right? And the biggest service providers. And it was BitPay, and BitPay was processing like all the merchant transactions. And it was Jihan, and Jihan was making the majority of ASICs and also controlling the majority of hash rate. It was a whole nother level, and they failed. And that's the value prop of Bitcoin. The value prop of Bitcoin is that it's incredibly hard to change by default, and that gives you incredibly strong security guarantees, because if you can change something very easily, then you can change it for the worse, and malicious changes can, you know, take down the network. Yeah. So to those who weren't there, also, if you weren't around back then, especially with this type of conversations, it's probably going to become more and more of a discussion is going to happen. You should read The Block Size War, which was written by the guy behind BitMEX Research. It's probably the closest you'll get to actually living through it in terms of learning from our history.
Yeah, it's important. You're going to hear a lot of this trotted out. A lot of the no coiners and people that want soft forks pass saying, oh, Saylor is going to control Bitcoin. Larry Fink's going to control Bitcoin. Like, even with how much Bitcoin MicroStrategy has accumulated, BlockRock has accumulated on behalf of their customers, like, I think the network is so big now, even these actors don't have the same amount of influence over the ecosystem that the coalition of companies that were pushing the New York agreement in 2017 had at the time.
I would also say, like, if you want this discussion to be taken seriously, like, it shouldn't require an X account to participate. I think that is, I might be talking my own book, but I'm glad to see more and more of discussion happening on Noster about it, because having it behind a login paywall is kind of ridiculous.
Not ideal. Not ideal. Moving on, Human Rights Foundation story of the week coming from Nicaragua, where a journalist was arrested for criticizing rising cost of living. The national police arrested Nicaraguan journalist Elizabeth Dianda last month for criticizing the rising cost of living on his television program, La Cobertura. The regime loyalist deployed 20 officers and detained Dianda at his home, confiscating his equipment before taking him to notorious El Chipote prison. Several press freedom organizations have condemned the arbitrary detention as an attack on free expression. This arrest is the latest addition to a series of repressive measures by the Sandinista regime, which has crushed independent media through shutdowns, exiles, intimidations, and persecutions. Learn more about this story and others on a week-in, week-out basis. Make sure you sign up for the Human Rights Foundation Financial Freedom Report newsletter, which comes out every Thursday morning. Go to financialfreedomreport.org. Late stage, fiat. Prices go up. You complain about it. The government says, stop complaining about it. It's not happening. We're going to throw you in prison. Censorship as they lose control of their monetary system. Pretty standard for despotic regimes.
Yeah, it's fucked up. I mean, I would like to see... you know, I think Noster can be an incredibly powerful tool here, where you are able to post to the world anonymously, if you so choose, and build up a reputation on that NIM, right? So if someone's starting today and they want to be a opposition journalist, they don't have to use their legal name. And over the years, they will build up a verifiable reputation as someone who's, you know, not posting fake news and is actually doing good work. And that can empower people around the world that are dealing with these authoritarian governments who are imprisoning them for just speaking the truth.
Yeah. Bitcoin fixes this. We need a...
Freedom tech, man. It's the way. It's the hope.
Freedom money. With that, we will go to the top four boost from Rabbit Hole Recap 332. 100K in sight. Still in sight. I can see it.
I fucking nailed the name this time around. Shout out me. Marty, what did you bring into the studio with you today?
Nothing. Nothing.
Marty's got a bottle of champagne next to him that he's just in case we hit 100K during the show.
I wanted it to be a surprise, you know?
Well, I ruined it.
We're going to gap up. Everybody go smash by. Just kidding. Top four boost from Rabbit Hole Recap 332. Eric99, 50,000 sats. Stay humble. Stack sats.
Great advice. Appreciate you. Ride or die, freak.
At open mic, 42,000 sats. Put down the turkey and gobble up ticks for Sats by Southwest Day 2 Value for Value music event in Austin. I will be here. It's going to be a great event. Panel discussions directed towards onboarding musicians at Bitcoin Commons on December 15th in a concert with Toonster live stream featuring MC Adam Carey, the podfather himself, at Antone's nightclub on December 16th. Info at www.satsbysw.com. It'll be great. Great Sunday, Monday here in Austin.
Love it.
In a couple weeks. At Fousey, 25,000 sats. Another one. Meet up at Waveland Bowl, 3700 Northwestern Avenue, Chicago. Bowling for Bitcoin. Hang out, shine some balls, and grab a pitcher. 1 to 5 p.m. Sunday, December 15th. Bring the fam or friends. A lot of Bitcoin activity on December 15th. Chicago. Bullish. Waveland Bowl, 3700 Northwestern Avenue. Last but not least, Scott, 21,000 sats. We can't have 100K until Marty reads mandibles. Wow, really?
Well, we're fucked.
We're fucked. Dump it.
Marty's never going to read. If Marty hasn't read it yet, how's the chances of him reading it are less than 0%.
You can't get less than zero.
It's going negative.
It's going negative. Those were the top four boosts from Rabbit Hole Recap 332. Thank you guys for contributing to the show in value for value content. Again, like I said at the beginning of the show, it brings us immense joy that you guys get value out of this. This is why we've been coming week in and week out to talk about the news in the space for the last 6+ years. And moving over to Zap.stream to see if we got any more. Zaps have been slowing down a little bit.
We appreciate all the support, and we appreciate you tuning in and week out.
I would be happy if Marty could read the white paper to me. I'll read the white paper to you. My path to fire.
You do not. You can read it next week.
Okay.
Marty, did you zap today?
I think I did this morning.
Logan pulled it up. I can't read it. What does it say, Logan?
It says has not.
You have not. Don't trust Verify.
Yeah, don't trust this website. It's bullshit.
What's the website URL? HasMartyZapToday.com?
Did he just go on live?
No, it's still live. It just stopped recording.
Yeah. Just got to rip it from...
I'm going to have to pull it down from YouTube.
Okay, Logan. Well,
what'd you do? You fucked something up, or...?
We don't record locally as much anymore, so it got full because I wasn't thinking about it.
Wow.
What are you gonna use the bigger computer I bought you? I bought you a beefed up
when you bring in a power cord for it.
I told you to let me know if you need it. I'll bring it in. I got a beefed up computer.
You asked me and I said that I need that.
You gotta text me. That's on me. I'll hand up. I'll take full responsibility for this one.
Okay, we're gonna hold you accountable on this one.
Okay.
15,48,000 sats from Drew just zapped in. So thank you, Drew. That makes it a little bit better that Marty and Logan just fucked up. But
thank you, Drew.
We can just pull it from YouTube. It'll be slightly worse quality, but it'll be fine.
Yeah, it should be fine.
Actually, we can probably pull it from Restream, and it'll be better quality than YouTube.
We'll figure
do
it
that.
Out. On to, did you want to say something?
Yeah. No, let's go. I need to wrap in 10 minutes.
Same. On to the software update section of the show. Blue Wallet version 7.0.5 is out. It comes with a variety of new goodies, including offline import support, coin control, sorting, notification shortcuts, and more. Blue Wallet, great mobile wallet. If you're looking to self-custody, I do have some feedback for the Blue Wallet team. If you're listening, I was talking to somebody who's using the Android build on Graphene, and feature parity is lacking compared to iOS versions. And there are some Blue Wallet Graphene users out there who would like you to get that wallet on feature parity with everybody else.
Is it just, I mean, it's Android in general? I assume not just Graphene.
I don't know, maybe Android in general. I'm trying to be specific with this particular build, but
okay. Well,
recovering doesn't rescan the wallet, and there's like bugs when you're trying to put in an amount of sats over a million or something like that.
Yeah, and I mean, unfortunately, the Android lifestyle is very often we have to be behind on features from the iOS counterpart. Of course, there's other times where you're able to do things that you're just not even allowed to do on iOS, so. Trade-offs all the way down. I will say that I think there's a strong place in the market for a multi-platform iOS, Android, just a really good PSBT supporting on-chain wallet that just does one thing really well and keeps it really simple. And there is a team right now working on it, working on solving this problem that is being funded by OpenSats.
And isn't Fully Noted doing that?
No, Fully Noted does a bunch of things, right? I think the key here is a wallet that is just incredibly simple, and it doesn't require you to have a node that you're running separately. It doesn't do coin join. It's just interacts with like Sparrow Wallet for mobile, right? Just can interact with hardware wallets. Can do PSBTs, does on-chain only, doesn't require a node, or you can use it with your own node. And there's a team, I'm beta testing it right now, and they've been making really good progress. So hopefully we'll have more information on that soon. But it is a fully open source wallet.
Not comfortable name dropping right now, or?
I don't know if I'm, too early. I mean, it's called Cove Wallet.
Comfortable.
I don't know. I don't know if I was out of line there or not, but it is open source. So what do they care? They've been doing great work.
Shout out to the team doing great work over there. Next up, OLAS version 0.1.4 has been updated with Instagram. Like, it's an Instagram like Nostr client. So they've got new features. Want to go check that out. Looks like they have Blossom uploads and server selection.
This is Pablo. OLAS.
Yeah, and he built, used NDK to build this. Or what did he do? We talked about this last week.
NDK Mobile.
Yeah, NDK Mobile.
Which is also his project.
Do you want to give on-air highlighter talk right now?
What, the highlighter talk is also his project.
I know, but we were talking about it offline this week.
What were we talking about?
It just needs to reach feature parity with Hopla or something like that.
Oh no, I've been giving him private feedback. He's all over the place. He'll get it together. He's okay. Working on it. He's crushing it. Pablo's crushing it. It's all coming together, freaks. It's all coming together.
As is evident by the release of Flotilla, a Discord-like Nostr client for relay-based communities. This is really cool to see. Highlights the breadth of Nostr. People think social media, all that. Discord, probably one of the most popular apps in the world right now. I think we missed it. It's more of a Gen Z thing. I use it for Midjourney and a few other things, but...
Also Discord, completely closed source, Discord. Discord
is where all the kids are hanging out, though.
Yeah, so this is obviously an open source alternative that uses Nostr. So the last release, OLAS, is an Instagram-like competitor. This is a Discord-like competitor. They all use this interoperable Nostr protocol. You can kind of think of Nostr as like this open API for the world. Like any developer can build on it. And particularly like where we currently are with all of these large APIs basically going behind walled gardens, it really does empower developers in a way that's not possible otherwise. So hopefully we'll see many, many, many different types of Nostr clients that all try and tackle different niches and different use cases. And because they use Nostr, they're all interoperable with each other. Love to see it. This is HODLBOD, by the way.
HODLBOD from Coracle.
I think both Pablo and HODLBOD are on long-term support grants out of OpenSense.
Yeah, and this is interesting here. If you read the notes from No Bullshit Bitcoin, the diversity of ideas about how different use cases should be approached is beginning to emerge too. There's some differences, which is healthy. It seems like Flotilla decided not to use NIP29 groups because they're more like Telegram groups where they need something more like Discord and Slack workspaces. So they're going off and designing a different type of group chat protocol or implementation to bring this to market a different way.
Yeah, I mean, it's HODLBOD's journey is quite fascinating. His main goal, he has said multiple times, I believe, his main goal is to try and build something that can get his church off of Facebook groups, because his church relies on Facebook groups right now for everything. And that just seems ridiculous. Like, you shouldn't need a Facebook account to be able to interact with fellow church members.
Yeah. A lot of what people use Facebook for these days is Facebook Marketplace. Quasi-competitors being released on Nostr by the day. Zap Store, it's more software-based, but you do have...
No, Zap Store is like an App Store competitor.
App Store competitor. But what's the other one I'm thinking of?
There's one that's it's called Shopster. There's a couple of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I as someone who hasn't had a Facebook account for a decade, there are two things that I feel left out, by not having a Facebook account. It's Facebook Marketplace. Lots of people are selling things on Facebook Marketplace. And finding a nanny, like a million people, so many mothers have told my wife that the best way to find a nanny is on Facebook. And neither of us have Facebook accounts, so we've have to do it the good old-fashioned way, which has been quite difficult. And Noster should be able to fix both.
What is a good old-fashioned way? You just walk around your neighborhood walking up to people that look
no,
like
No, you just have nannies. To ask. You have to ask for references and like recommendations from, you know, like friends. But the, you know, there's a tension there, right? Because they don't want to give up their best nannies.
No, yeah.
So you always feel like people are holding out on you.
Yeah, you gotta find the family whose kids are like reaching the age of like 11.
Yeah, they're aging out. Yeah,
they're aging out. It's like, all right, let us pass your nanny down to us, please. Speaking of Zap Store version 0.1.6 has been released, which improves background loading, fixes themed icons, allows sending error reports, and more.
I love this project. I'm going to have the creator of Zap Store and the maintainer, his name's Fran Zap. He's going to come on Citadel Dispatch next week. And while I'm on that topic, my most recent Citadel Dispatch was with Callie. I was with Million, and before that, Callie, and both of those were just really great conversations. So if you haven't heard them yet, consider giving them a listen by searching Citadel Dispatch in your favorite podcast app.
Go check it out, freaks. Last but not least, Tor Browser version 14.0.3 has been released, and it includes important security updates from Firefox.
Yeah, so if you rely on Tor Browser, you should update ASAP, it seems like.
Yeah, beware. Very important project.
Also, I saw some rumblings, and I have not verified it, but I saw some rumblings on Noster that Firefox might be going bankrupt. Did you see this?
Aren't they Foundation?
I mean, foundations can, run out of money. I guess maybe bankrupt is the wrong word, but.
But aren't they supported by, like, they're
a nonprofit
or whatever?
I believe they're a nonprofit.
That would suck. Firefox is my daily browser.
Yeah, that would be pretty brutal for the ecosystem.
Yeah.
But once again, didn't verify it, so who the hell knows?
Support a very very
important
browser.
I saw like half an hour before we went live.
We'll look into that. We'll report back next week on that. See, I'm crossing my legs. I have to go to the bathroom, and we want to keep this tight. Our families are in town. I think this was a good tight rip.
It was a great rip. I appreciate you, Marty. I'm grateful for you. I'm grateful for you, freaks. Stay on the stack set.
Because back in the ice box, wasn't able to pop it.
We're never gonna hit 100K because y'all just keep jinxing it.
I'm disappointed in you, freaks, for not pushing it over. Just kidding. Love you all. Peace and love.